Okay, this evening's shiur is a sugya that I had to look into last week. There is a very erlich person who I do not know who called me on the phone. He said he listens to my shiurim online and had a question that he wanted me to discuss with my father. So I was very taken by the fact that he asked this question, and that was, he said that he has, the last couple of years, he has some sort of disorder in his eyes, and he said over the last few years he was walking around like literally like he couldn't see anything, as if he was almost blind. And finally, after years of having this disorder, whatever it was, I didn't catch exactly what the issue in particular was, but he said the doctor decided that maybe he would be a candidate for a cornea transplant. And he said he went through the procedure, and it was a 5 or 6 week recovery. So he had it on one eye, then 6 weeks later he had it on the other eye, and he said he sees better now than he ever saw in his life. And he was just so amazed, and he was so overwhelmed when he was talking on the phone about his condition and how cured he is as a result of this procedure. And then he said he came to shul one day, and somebody next to him said, you know, there's a shaila whether or not you're even able to accept a cornea transplant. And he said, like, it didn't even dawn on him to think about it. So he said he's going to call. I mean, it's too late now. It's in already. But it made me look into the sugya. I thought it was a very fascinating question. So let's just back up a step and let us talk about organ donation in general. When we deal with the question of organ donation in general, let's just get one issue out of the way, and that is something I was a little bit uncomfortable with the way it was presented this past Shabbos when we spoke about brain death issues. There's a major machlokus in the last 50 years as to what the status of brain death is. Do we consider that to be death, or perhaps we do not? I think many of the prominent poskim of our generation feel that brain death is not considered death, and that is contrary to what Dr. Steinberg said this week. He, in his understanding, feels that brain death is considered dead, and therefore he said that's why when he was making many of the laws in Israel, when he was working on the various legislatures that were necessary for end-of-life issues, he had no problem making laws that went along with that assumption. That is not the assumption of most of the Gedolei HaPoskim of our generation, and therefore, when we talk about donating organs, one has to be very careful that you're not touching on that issue of organ donation when the person is still alive, because brain dead, many assume, is still alive, and therefore that is a major issue. So let us just forget about that issue for now. It's too big of a topic to talk about here, and I'm certainly not knowledgeable enough to really understand it properly. All of my rabbeim and anybody I would ask a shaila to, all are of the opinion that brain death is not considered to be death at all. So let's leave that aside. What we are talking about is when you're going to harvest organs after the person has already died, meaning their heart has already stopped beating. Not all the organs are able to be used. There are a limited number of organs that can still be used and harvested after the person has already officially died, even after they are no longer beating in their heart. So the three obstacles that you have to overcome, some are Issur D'oraisa, some are Issur D'rabbanan. That's what we're going to talk about this evening. Issur number one that we have to deal with is one is not allowed to get any hana from the body of from a cadaver, from a dead body. Number two, we have an issur to desecrate or defile. Nivel hames is something that we would not allow. And number three, we have a mitzvah saseh of kvuras hames. You're not allowed to leave a body without burying it. And therefore, these three obstacles are the three issues that have to be dealt with whenever we're talking about organ donation, which is going to be done after the person is officially, legally, halachically dead. That's what we have to discuss. Although these three are very important issues, it's quite obvious that when you're talking about a situation of pikuach nefesh, and somebody else has an organ that would be helpful to save the life of another person, there's no question that we would be able to overlook all three of these isurim. Why? Because pikuach nefesh is doche kol haTorah kula, except for avodah zarah, gilui arayos, and shvichas damim. And therefore, there's no discussion, there's no machlokes at all when we talk about a chole sheyesh bo sakana, a chole who really could have a life-threatening illness. We certainly would say in a case like that, that one would be allowed to harvest organs. So just as an example, one of the organs that's able to be harvested is kidneys. Even after the person passes away, you have a few minutes to take the kidneys out and use them for another patient. So if you have someone who's on dialysis, many poskim of our generation feel that since a person who has to go to the hospital and go on the dialysis often will have complications and will not always be so stable in terms of their health. So we would assume that is called perhaps a chole sheyesh bo sakana that could lead to a pikuach nefesh situation. And certainly we would be allowed to overlook any of these issues, and we would be allowed to harvest that organ, provided that the person agreed to it before they died, that they were going to give over the organ. So in such a case, we would certainly be allowed to do it, and there would be no problem at all. What is a little bit tricky is the situation that we have today, and that is the Netivei Yehuda has a discussion in the 1700s. What do you do about the following case? The Netivei Yehuda got the Shaila, he lived in Prague, and he got the Shaila from the Jews in London, he writes in the Tshuva. And the Shaila was, there was somebody who had Choli ha'even b'kiso. I think that means kidney stones. Choli ha'even b'kiso, I would imagine, but I don't know exactly. So he says there was somebody who had this illness, and they assumed that it was a life-threatening illness, and in the end, the person actually died from whatever it was that was the complication, that was the condition. And the question was afterward, is it muter lachtoch beguf hameis b'makam hazeh? Are they allowed to do an autopsy now in order to have a better medical understanding, in order to further their knowledge and their research about whatever illness this was? It's going to not help. It's not going to help the person who already died, obviously, but maybe it will help somebody the next time around. So the Netivei Yehuda was asked this question, would we have a right? Obviously, as we said, if it's a real pikuach nefesh, you have every right to do whatever it takes to violate any aveira to save your life. But what about when we're talking about a situation like this one, where you don't have somebody who's going to be saved now because of what we see, but perhaps in 5 years from now, when you have another patient who comes with the same symptoms, then we'll at least know what we're dealing with and we'll have a better understanding of the condition. And that is the question that was sent to the Netivei Yehuda. Do you have a right to do the harvesting of the organs, not for the sake of putting it into another person now and saving their life, but rather you want to do it because maybe in the future you're going to be able to save a life, and that will be Davar ha'omed b'pnei pikuach nefesh. That is the question that the Netivei Yehuda was dealing with. And the matirim, there were those who sent him that they felt it should be mutter, and they had all kinds of rayas to explain why it should be permissible. One of the proofs that they brought is from a famous Gemara Maseches Baba Basra, where the Gemara says there was somebody who got a Yerusha from his father, and there were a whole bunch of siblings, or a whole bunch of other Yarshim as well, but this person was Machar v'nichsei aviv. He went ahead and he sold the Yerusha that he got from his father, and now he died. He sold it, and now he died himself, the Yorish. And the other family members claimed, how did he have the right to sell it? At the time that he sold it, he was a katan. At the time that he died, he was a katan. A katan doesn't have a right to make business deals. He's too young. He doesn't have a full and complete understanding. And therefore, the question was raised, maybe we should be allowed to open up the grave to check whether or not we consider him to be a gadol. There are ways to check on a person's body whether or not they're a gadol or a katan. Do we have a right to exhume the body to figure out whether or not this transaction that he did with the father's money that was given to him by Yerusha, whether or not he had a right to do that? Fascinating story. And the Gemara comes to the conclusion that iatara shay lenavlo, you don't have a right to do nivel hameis, to desecrate the body for this purpose. So the question is why? Question is why? So Tosis writes there, the reason why is because for money, over money, what? There's no pikuach nefesh. Over money you're going to go and dig up a body just because you're fighting. Now it could be millions of dollars. Who knows what he sold? But still, Tosis assumes that that's what the Gemara means. Just for the sake of money is not a good enough excuse to violate the Isser of Nivel Hameis. However, there were those who argued with the Netivei Yehuda and said, well, maybe we should say that's because it was for the sake of money. But maybe when you're talking about a pikuach nefesh, and not only a pikuach nefesh here, but a potential pikuach nefesh 5 years down the line, maybe that should be allowed, because that's not at all similar to the case that the Gemara describes. The reason why I'm violating the Isra of Nivel Hameis is because I really want to bring about the greater good in the long run. So that is the question that the Netivei Yehuda was faced with. Here it's not necessarily a vadai. I'm sorry, what? Right. So take a test case. The Gemara has another story. What about there was an aguna? It's a good point. But what about there was an aguna who somebody said, no, I saw they buried your husband. So why are you an aguna? He's buried. We know that he died. So the question is, do we have a right to exhume the body to check whether or not that's the husband? Well, that's not pikuach nefesh. She'll live the rest of her life being an aguna. It's a terrible situation, don't get me wrong. But an aguna is an aguna, and pikuach nefesh is pikuach nefesh. So do you have a right to exhume the body? It's also a vada. You're going to look, and you'll determine whether or not it's him or it's not him. So does that give you a right? Not so clear. That's not so clear. So Rabbi Yosef Engel argues in one of his svarim, he says, no, maybe being an aguna is pikuach nefesh. You're going to tell a woman, she's 20 years old, her husband just died in the battlefield, you're going to tell her she has to remain single for the rest of her life, and that's something we should just be able to live with? So Rabbi Yosef Engel has such an argument, but I think most would say aguna is a very horrible situation, but it's not pikuach nefesh. Anyway, it would be a good potential test case to that shaila about whether or not vadei and safek would make a difference. In the end, the Nodi Behuda comes to the following conclusion, and he says, if there's a safek nefashos bifaneinu, he says, if there's another patient who comes into the hospital, has the same symptoms, so then obviously we'd be allowed to do it. But he says, if you're going to have a situation where you just want to do some medical research to maybe find out somewhere along the way that maybe you're going to be able to save a patient 5 years down the line, he says that would not be something that would allow us to violate the issur of Nivala Meis. And that is the conclusion that he comes to. In the end, he says, if we're going to start being makel with this, then every single body should be dissected. Why? Because you'll always learn something for somebody, maybe down the line, and therefore he says, and the davar self, you're never going to bury a body again. You're never going to learn about the issur of Nivala Meis again, because in every single body there is a doctor who's going to learn something from the research that he's doing. And therefore the Nodi Behuda writes, unless there's a chola bifaneinu, that would be something that we would not allow at all. In fact, the Nodi Behuda writes as well, what would you tell me that on Shabbos, we know that you're allowed to violate an Avera on Shabbos, Mishum Pikuach Nefesh. So he says, would that mean that all the Isurim on Shabbos would be allowed? Because maybe there's a chola somewhere in the world that maybe is going to gain from whatever it is that we're doing. He says, that's crazy, then we're just going to get rid of all the Hilchos Shabbos also. So therefore, the Nodi Behuda says, we have to limit it, and we have to say that it only applies to a case where there is a chola bifaneinu, and we have a convincing argument to say that by doing this dissection, by doing this kind of research, we really will be able to transfer that information to help this kind of patient. Otherwise, he says, it is not permissible. So the Chassam Sofer picks up on this, and he says, a couple of years later, Chassam Sofer was in the 1800s, he says, well, what you do see from the Nodi Behuda is that if we have a chola bifaneinu, it's certainly mutter. Of course we'd be allowed to overlook the violation of Nivala Meis for the purpose of the chola bifaneinu. So that's what the Chassam Sofer says. Now, the problematic statement here is, how do we define bifaneinu? Does it mean in the same room, in the same hospital, in the same city, in the same country? What does chola bifaneinu actually mean? So that's where it gets a little uncomfortable, because nowadays, where we have a global community, the Chazon Ish writes, and you can take information from some research that's done in China, and you can use it here on the other side of the world, maybe we would consider that a chola bifaneinu. And maybe exactly the definition that the Nodi Behuda gave stays the same, it just happens to be far more expansive than it used to be. So that is the shaila that we have to deal with today, and that's why the question is a really important one. It's a really extremely critical issue to really figure out. So if you look over here, Rav Moshe was uncomfortable with this whole cheshbon of the Nodi Behuda, and he voices his objection to the whole calculation that's made. And he says over here, let's look in the tshuva together. Af shetam ha-Nodi Behuda delo dachiran isura mishum chashash akala zu. Shema yizdam in chola shub tam dachuk. He says, you're right. We don't just do medical research because maybe somewhere one in a billion is going to come and be helpful to us. No. He says, if you're going to follow the logic of the Nodi Behuda, even if you have an illness that's one in a million, one in a billion, you're still going to be able to use the research somewhere else in the world, because with all the technology that we have today, writes Rav Moshe, and it's certainly true today, Rav Moshe wrote this tshuva 50 years ago, but it's certainly true today, if a doctor finds out that his patient has the same illness as somebody on the other side of the world has, and it's a very rare disease, they're going to share the information, they're going to share all the research that they have, and therefore Rav Moshe says, once you accept this Nodi Behuda, then it means everything's mutter. So how can that be? So Rav Moshe writes, Bifrat Bizman Azeh, certainly today where we have the ability to connect illnesses from all over the world, not only do we have the ability to share information, but we also have the ability to share medications or to share whatever it is that worked in our hospital, we can send somewhere else. He says, therefore I say, you cannot expand this definition of chola bifaneinu so far. Hu aser mishum dila hislame lirefua leka chiyuv al ha'adam umemela aser mishum nival hames. Amazing chiddush of Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe said, who told you to be a doctor? Who told you to be a doctor? There's no mitzvah to be a doctor. If you're a doctor and you know how to save lives, so then there's a mitzvah to go save a life. You can't just turn your eyes away and say, I'm too busy now. But if you're not a doctor and you know nothing about medicine, who told you that you have to go into the profession? So somebody called me recently about Shomer Shabbos residencies. It's a major question, a major problem. What do we do about non-Shomer Shabbos residencies? It's a problem. So you'll say, what do you mean? The argument they made on the phone is, how could it be a problem? Isn't it pikuach nefesh? I'm going to save a life once I know this information and once I go through the schooling. Well, the answer is, Rav Moshe says, who told you to be a doctor? So you can't be docha and iser just because you made a decision in life that this is what you want to do. It's too bad. If you decided to do this, you have to figure out the right way to do it. If you don't have a right way to do it, who said you have the right to be involved in the profession in the first place? So that's where Rav Moshe is coming from here. It's a big chiddush that he says in the end. But he says, even if you're going to accept the argument of the Noda B'Yehuda, he says you cannot expand it as far as we might want to today. Otherwise, this would just be something that would have no end at all.
But if you could call someone, in the case of Shabbos,
yeah.
Call someone, they could tell you something, open the medication, look at it, right, it'll save his life. If you call them, you'd be, and they're on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
Would you be inhibited in doing that? You wouldn't be inhibited in doing those. You could, because why is distance enter into it? If the outcome is what is important, isn't it?
Of course, yeah.
So I'm saying, why is Rav Moshe concerned about saying Lefanenu not being...
No, meaning the Noda B'Yehuda means to say, Lefanenu means, I know definitively that this is going to help somebody.
It's the outcome.
Right.
That you're
but Rav Moshe says, then ain't the Dover Sof. At some point, this is going to help someone in the world. There's going to be someone else who has this kind of thing also. So I would have said, I mean, who am I? But I would have said, well, then that's why it's permissible. Because it's going to help someone. But Rav Moshe says, no, the definition that the Noda B'Yehuda was giving is, if we know with a definite yes that this is going to help somebody else, that's the only time it's permissible to violate the Aveir. That's what he says, yeah?
Would that be the case here? We know in China someone else would benefit from it also.
Somewhere down the line, maybe.
So now, we know that there's another case in the hospital in China that
yeah.
would benefit from it.
And there's no other research?
Let's say.
Yeah.
According to our motion, it doesn't matter. Like, okay, so...
So that's where it gets a little sticky. So we'll have to continue in the shir, and you'll see that there are certain haterim where it would apply, and that really brings us back to the shayla that we started with. So, in fact, Rav Moshe has another tshuva in which he writes about organ donation in general. I always find it interesting in Rav Moshe's tshuvas when he writes English words in Hebrew. He didn't translate them into Hebrew. He just transliterated them from English into Hebrew. It's very interesting. So here, he has a shayla from the office of the president. It's interesting. So he says that Rav Moshe Scherer in 1978 asked him the following question. So let's look at the next paragraph. B'davar shenishal mi Washington, mi lishkas hanasi. He said, I got the shaila from Washington, D.C., office shel president. Fascinating. B'davar shimush be'evarim shel hames, al pitzah ba'asa l'tzarech refuah. Somebody leaves over instructions that they want that their body should be given over for medical research. Hinani Mesha Bikzer. Rav Moshe says, I'm going to answer a very short answer. Ki al pi din ha-Torah shekiblu chazal ish mipi ish ad Moshe Rabbeinu alav ha-shalom shekibalnu mi-Sinai. Ein shum adam bailem al-gufa l'tzavo sheyasa b'gufa. You don't have the right to make such a decision. Your body doesn't belong to you. And therefore Rav Moshe says, even if that is your wish, and you say, I'd like, you're such a benevolent person, and you're so kind, and you say, I want that my body should be given over for medical research because I don't care about myself, I care about everyone else. Afilu rak be'evar echa me'evarav, says Rav Moshe. Even to give one organ away. Shum davar af lo l'tzarchei hasaga yediyah l'inyon refuah. If you're doing it only for the purpose of medical research, v'kol shekein shebana v'krova v'ena b'ala malzeh, certainly if the person himself didn't leave over these instructions, and the children just say, oh, we think it would be nice if we gave over the parent's body for this purpose. He says, not only do we have the issue of the fact that the body doesn't belong to you, but he says there's a second issue, and that is, you're not allowed to have hana from a body. He said you have an obligation to bury the person, and therefore he says, we have no right to donate our bodies after death to the cause of medical research. That's what Rav Moshe says. What's going to be? How am I going to be a doctor? Says Rav Moshe before, nobody told you to be a doctor. Too bad. Which is a very interesting line, as we saw before, that's the argument that he makes. Okay, now, the case that we're talking about here, though, that we started with, is somebody who is losing his eyesight and did not have a real situation of pikuach nefesh. The situation that they had was they're going to lose their eyesight. But so that's a good question. You're saying that the Gemara says Asuma is Chashav Kemes. The Gemara says four Arbaim Chashav Kemes. So there's a famous story that Rav Soloveitchik once spoke at a convention. And who are the four people that are Chashav Kemes? Suma, Mitzora, Ani, and Misha and Lobanim, somebody who doesn't have children. So apparently, the story goes something like this. Apparently it was written up in the newspaper the next week. The Rabbi Soloveitchik said you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for the purpose of having children because the Gemara says that a Misha and Lobanim is Chashav Kemes. And therefore, same way you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh, so you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for this purpose also. That's what somebody wrote, something to that effect. So one of Rav Soloveitchik's daughters wrote a response and said, did you hear? She was making fun, and she wrote a response to the newspaper and said, did you hear? My father gave a shiur last week, and he said, people are allowed to go to work on Shabbos also because an Ani Chashav Kemes. So if the Gemara says Ani Chashav Kemes, it means we don't want him to die, so we allow him to go to work on Shabbos. So she said, as ridiculous as that is, this is also... What's ridiculous about it? Doesn't the Gemara say it? So she said, the answer is, that's not what it means. It means, Ani Chashav Kemes means, it's a terrible situation. It doesn't mean that literally we consider the person like he's dead. You're not allowed to go shoot that person because you say he's not alive anymore. Of course that's not the case. And therefore, even though the Gemara does say that Asuma is Chashav Kemes, we'll get back to it later, but to rely solely on that line of the Gemara is a little bit questionable because most assume that Gemara is Divrei Agada. The Gemara just means to say, allegorically, or we assume that a person's condition is so terrible, living life, being blind is so difficult, it's Chashav Kemes, living life like an Ani, living life, Misha and Lobanim, or like a Mitzora, is very, very difficult. So that is one of the arguments that is made. But so let's just hold on to that for a minute. So what I'd like to do is go through the three obstacles that we spoke about and try to deal with those. So let's see. Number one was the mitzvah hakvura. We have a mitzvah after a person dies, you have to bury them. Where does that come from? We have a pasuk in Sefer Devarim. Lo salin nivlaso al ha'etz ki kavar tikbarena bayom hahu. What is that referring to? That's talking about haruge bezdin. Haruge bezdin, we know there are people who violate certain averas. Bezdin has to take their lives. And in such a case, we're told that if you have a haruge bezdin, after they kill the person, they hang them on a tree. Why do they do that? That everybody, v'chala'am yishmu v'yiro, everybody should see how terrible it is to violate an avera, and the fact that capital punishment will be administered if you violate a certain type of level of avera. Fine. Says the pasuk, lo selin nivlas ala eitz, you're not allowed to leave his body hanging for too long, ki kavar tikbarena bayamahu, you have to bury him at the end of the day. Fine. So from here we see that there's a mitzvah of kvura. Says the Gemara in Sanhedrin daf mem vav. Amar Rabbi Yochanan mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Minayin lemalanes meso sheover ala belosase. How do you know when we're talking about a mace that is not a haruge bezdin? We don't have capital punishment today, but how do you know when you're talking about a regular person who passes away, naturally, how do you know, sheover belosase, that if you don't bury him, you violate an avera. Says the Gemara, ki kavar tikbarenu, because this pasuk says that you have to bury him. That goes not only on haruge bezdin, it goes on all people who pass away need to be buried. Then says the Gemara, ikka de amri, amr Rabbi Yochanan mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, remez lekvura min ha-Torah minayin. Where do we have a hint to the mitzvah of kvura in the Torah? Says the Gemara, tamalavar ki kavar tikbarenu. Mikan remez lekvura min ha-Torah. So the Lecha Mishnah picks up on this. He says, what's the difference? The Gemara first says, the first lashon is kavar tikbarenu. Second lashon is remez lekvura, kavar tikbarenu. Same thing. So what's the difference? So he says you have to be a careful studier of the Gemara to understand that there's one major difference. The first line of the Gemara says, Minayin. From where in Chumash do we learn out the mitzvah d'araisa of kvura? Which means the first lashon of the Gemara is assuming it's a mitzvah d'araisa to bury someone. The second lashon of the Gemara is, Remez l'kvura min ha-Torah minayin. Which means the second lashon assumes it's only in din d'rabanan, when we're talking about those who are not haruge bezdin. Lecha Mishnah says, this is the difference between this first lashon of the Gemara and the second, whether or not we have a mitzvah d'araisa of kvura or a mitzvah midrabanan of kvura. As we know, the Rambam paskins lahalacha that we have a mitzvah of kvura min ha-Torah. We have a mitzvah d'araisa to bury a person, and therefore the Rambam says even if a person leaves over instructions that they don't want to be buried, we don't have a right to listen to them because you don't have a right to give instructions that are against a mitzvah Shabbat Torah. The Stechemet even goes so far and he asks, Why is it that we don't make a bracha on the mitzvah of kavura? If you're actually fulfilling a mitzvah, either deraisa or derabanan, so we should be reciting a bracha on this. And the Stechemet says, chipasti, I think he says, I looked around all over the place, v'lo matzasi tamaspik. I haven't found a good reason to answer my question. It's a real mitzvah. If you assume, like either Lashon of the Gemara, either mitzvah deraisa, mitzvah derabanan, we should assume that this is something that a bracha should be made on. Fine. That is, with regard to Mesim, we paskin like the Rambam, mitzvahs kvura min ha-Torah. For those of us living in America, this issue is much simpler. Why? Because usually when a body part is taken from a cadaver, when you do some sort of dissection, it is normally from a non-Jew, because the odds are against us. And therefore, the question has to be asked, is there a mitzvah kvura for a non-Jew as well? Well, Rashi on Chumash assumes, Rashi posits, that the only mitzvah of kavura is for Yisroel. But meise akum, you don't have an obligation of kavura. That's what Rashi writes on Chumash. And that is a discussion in the Rishonim. The Ramban says, if you live in Eretz Yisrael, the Ramban says, the Pasuk says, lo setame asad mascha, means you have to do an extra shmira to make sure there's no tumah around in Eretz Yisrael. So there, the Ramban suggests you have a mitzvah of kavura, both for a Jew and a non-Jew alike, in order not to violate the Aveira of Los Atame Asad Mascha. But for those of us living in Chutz La'aretz, it's not a problem at all. And that's why my father has often mentioned the fact that for those who choose to go to school in Eretz Yisrael when they're going to medical school, they have an added problem that they have to deal with. Not only all the issues that we're dealing with when you have dissection and whether or not it's permissible, plus the fact that in Eretz Yisrael you have Jewish cadavers, which might be even more problematic. But even if you have non-Jewish cadavers, you still have a problem like the Ramban says of Lo Satame Sad Mascha. So you have a lot of issues that you have to deal with if you are planning to go to medical school. But that is obstacle number one, is Kvura. And Kvura, we said, is a mitzvah daraisa for a Ben Yisrael. For a Ben Noach, Rashi writes on Chumash that it's not a mitzvah at all. We don't have that obligation. The Gemara does say, Mipnei Darkei Shalom. If the accepted practice in the world is that you bury non-Jews as well, which obviously is the practice today, and you happen to chance upon a non-Jewish cadaver, it doesn't mean you should just leave it there on the side of the road. What kind of way is that to deal with other people? So the Gemara says, even though there might not be a mitzvah, you should do Mipnei Darkei Shalom, in order that we should have normal relationships with both communities. We should try to go out of our way to be respectful and kind and do that mitzvah for them as well. What?
How about a brios? I mean, it's a Shem's creation.
Yeah.
It's a little hard to...
It's a good question. I don't know.
Is
yeah.
Is there a mitzvah about kind and edel?
That what?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's the Medrash and Parshas Bereishis.
I don't know where it is.
Mm-hmm. Never heard it. I don't know. It's possible. I don't know. Okay, obstacle number two, as we mentioned, is the Isser Hana Min Hamesh. You're not allowed to derive benefit from a dead body. How do we know? What's the source of that? A Gemara Meseches Avodah Zarah Daf Chavtes Amud Beis Meis Gufe Minalan. How do you know that you're not allowed to have benefit from a cadaver? So the Gemara tells us, Asya Sham Sham Egla Arufa. We have Gzera Shava from Egla Arufa. Ksiv Hacha, it says, when Miriam Hanaviyah died, Vatamas Sham Miriam, Uksiv Hasam, and it says, by Egla Arufa, Va'arfu Sham Esa Egla Banachal. So just like an Egla Arufa is Asr Bahana, so too, a cadaver would be Asr Bahana as well. That's what the Gemara says. And once again, there's a suffix in the Mishnah Lamelech. Do we assume that this is an Issur D'Oraisa? Or do we assume that the Isser Hana Min Hames is only an Isser Midirabanan? That is a major issue that's going to be a critical component to answering our question as well. So number one, mitzvah of Kvura, we're not sure if it's Daraisa Dirabanan. The Rambam comes to the conclusion it's a mitzvah Daraisa. Now over here, when it comes to the second issue of Isser Hana Min Hames, we have the same suffix. Do we assume that it's an Isser Daraisa or only an Isser Dirabanan? Either way, Rabbi Kiva Eger asks an amazing question on Shulchan Aruch, and he wants to know, if everybody's in agreement, whether it's Asa D'Araisa or D'Rabbanan, everybody agrees that you're not allowed to have Hana, you're not allowed to have benefit from a cadaver, from a dead body, then he says, how is it that we have a funeral home that takes money for dealing with a dead body? How can you pay somebody to be a shomer in a hospital when somebody passes away? We have people who we pay to be a shomer. How can you do such a thing? How can I take money for that if I'm indirectly, basically, getting money because of the dead body? Isn't that a direct hana from the person who's dead? Or he says, if you are a person who drives a hearse, I don't know who does it, but somebody has to drive the hearse. I assume not all the drivers are non-Jews. The guy who looks like your brother, I told you. I don't know who he is, but he comes over to me all the time. a funeral director. I don't know who he is. Keeps coming over to me and saying hello. He looks exactly like you. Anybody know who he is? What? I asked you before, right? It's not related. I don't know. Anyway, so I didn't ask him this question. He's a funeral director. He makes his whole parnasa from funerals, from dealing with dead bodies. So what right, asked Rabbi Akiva Eger, do you have to do that? The Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, let's say you have Isuri Hana, whatever, Arla, I don't know, some kind of Isuri Hana. Am I allowed to be a truck driver? It doesn't belong to me, it's someone else's. And I'm not doing anything, I'm not making money on the deal. They just asked me to be the truck driver to take the Basar B'chalav from here and bring it to the store, to the provider over there. Or they asked me to bring the Arla from this part of the country to the other. So all I'm doing is I'm driving the truck. But the only reason why I'm being paid to do it is because I'm doing the service for something which is Isuri Hana. The Gemara says that's not permissible. So Rabbi Kivager asks, if that's the case, how am I allowed to be a driver of a Hurst, if that would also be parallel to the case that the Gemara gives of being the truck driver for the Isuri Hana?
Doing a mitzvah,
Oh, so that leads to the other question of the Acharonim. You're never allowed to take money for a mitzvah. So even if you get around the Isuri Hana, so that's what, no, that is the beginning of the answer. The Acharonim say, since you're never allowed to take money for a mitzvah in the first place, so how does a rabbi ever get paid? Teretz says the rabbi doesn't really get paid. But for those rabbis that do get paid, how do they ever take money? So the answer is they're only allowed to take schar batala. How much is it worth it for the community that I shouldn't go and get a different job? How much is it worth it for them that I shouldn't go and become a lawyer or a doctor? I'm smart enough to do that, but I chose not to. I chose to be a rabbi. So what right do I have to take money? The answer is I'm not taking money for the service that I'm giving. I'm taking money for not going to do something else. That's what we call schar batala. My father once made an argument. He said Dr. Lamb was getting upset in YU. I don't know if I ever said this here before. That he was upset that Rabbeim were taking off too much. You know, they were calling in sick. Their wife had to go somewhere. Or the babysitter canceled. Everybody was calling in sick. So Dr. Lamb said, we're going to start making a new rule next year. We're going to have certain days that you're allowed to take off. And more than that, you don't have a right to take off like any other job. So he said he's going to put it in the contract. So he called a meeting of the Rabbeim. And before the meeting started, my father said, I'd like to say something. So he said, sure. So he got up and he explained, none of us are really allowed to get paid in the first place. The only reason why we're being paid is Mishum Schar Batala. Right? So Rebbe's not allowed to get. So he said, if you're only paying us Mishum Schar Batala, you can't make a contract how many days off I'm allowed to get. It just it doesn't fit into the whole understanding of Schar Batala. So that was the end of the meeting. Dr. Lamb stepped down and he said, I guess we'll have to trust the Rabbeim that they're going to be a little more careful and come in whenever they can. But again, that's a Rekiva Eger's kasha, and it's a very strong kasha that has to be dealt with. How is a person who involves his whole parnasa just from the dead body, isn't that a direct hana from the mace himself? That's obstacle number two. Obstacle number three that we have to deal with is bizayon or nivel hamace, and that is, the Sifri says, a number vav, lo salin nivlaso al ha'etz, ma etz miyuchad shuhu nivalo, just like it's an embarrassment, it's a disgrace to leave a body hanging on a tree, af kol shuhu nivalo, so too, says the Sifri, you're not allowed to do any activity that would be a nivel, that would be a desecration of the body. It's not something that you're allowed to do. And once again, we find a discussion amongst the Rishonim and the Achronim, is this Isser of Nivel HaMeis and Isser de Araisa, or is it only an Asmachta, is it only an Isser de Rabbanan? So you have, in all three of the issues that we discussed, you have this question about whether or not it's Isser de Araisa or Isser de Rabbanan, and that makes a major difference. One more issue that we have to think about is, when we talk about the Isser Hana, when we say that you're not allowed to get benefit from a dead body, there's a question whether or not you're allowed to get benefit from a dead body which is a non-Jewish cadaver. So the Shulchan Aruch speaks about this. I forgot to put it on in Yeruday. The Shulchan Aruch says very clearly, Mace, Bein Ovid Kochavim Bein Yisrael, Tachricha Vasurim Behana. Either way, a mace is Asur Behana. Whether it's a Jewish cadaver or a non-Jewish, the Shulchan Aruch says clearly, you're not allowed to derive benefit from a dead body. Now, what's fascinating is the Shach there argues on the Shulchan Aruch, and the Shach says, why did you adopt that position? Don't you know that Tosis writes in Baba Kama Daf Yud that the whole Isser Hana from a mace is only from Mace Yisrael, not from Mace Akum? After all, we learned the Gemara together. Number hey, how do we know, what is the source that mace is Asur Hana? We learned it from Miriam. Miriam, he says, was a Jewish woman. And therefore he says, perhaps the whole prohibition of Hana min Hameis is only by a Jewish cadaver, and it does not apply to a non-Jewish cadaver at all. And he argues on the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch, the Vilna Gaon also argues, many prominent Achronim disagree, and the Mishnah Lamelech is one of them, who feels that a Meis Asur B'Hana only applies to a Jewish cadaver, it does not apply to a non-Jewish cadaver, which is why the Mishnah Lamelech has a whole discussion in this commentary on the Rambam that there were many Jews who were in the money-making business, and he says there were Jews who were also into the business of preparing mummies. I don't know, when did the Mishnah Lamelech live? I'm surprised that they still had mummies then. I don't know, I thought this was like such an old... Right. Did they still do that? They still do it today? Really?
They lay them out.
Uh-huh. So maybe that's what he means. He says hamumia. I think he means mummies. But I guess it's a similar kind of issue. So he said that there was a major question that was raised. Do we have a right as Jews to be involved in the business, the money-making business? People need the service. But do we have a right to do it? Isn't that getting hana from a dead body? And the Mishnah Melech writes, well, that really touches on this issue. Do we assume that there is an iser of hana min hames when the cadaver is a dead body that is only a akum? Or should we assume that it only applies to a mesa Yisrael, but it would not be applied to mesa akum? How about when we're talking about skin? So the Gemara Maseches Nida has a very interesting issue. When you say mes asur b'hana, so the Gemara wants to know, doesn't ask the question directly, which part of the mace is asur b'hana? Strange question. Right? Normally you wouldn't take anything. I would say just bury the whole body. It's a very relevant question today because if you have, let's say they put, nowadays they put defibrillators into patients who will need it, and it could be a very expensive machine. No? Can that be an expensive machine? What are we talking about? How much money?
A couple thousand dollars.
So obviously everyone would pay everything to have such a machine if they needed it. But the question is, let's say they put it in, and now the person dies, and the machine is still able to function very well. So the question is, do you assume after the mace passes away, is that called an isuri hana, because it's inside of the body? Do you have a right to take it out to use it for somebody else, or for the family at least, to hold on to it, to use at a later date? So that's a very big question. What part of the body, when we say mace asur b'hana, what does that include? What exactly does that mean? Do we say anything that's encompassed in this organism is now considered to be mace asur b'hana, which would include the defibrillator, the machine, that obviously is not a real part of the natural body? Or would you say no, maybe it has some limitations? So we have an interesting Gemara Maseches Nida, Daf Nunhei, where the Gemara says in number Ches, Amar Ula Dvar Torah, Or Adam Tahar. Ula says that Minat Torah, if you look in Chumash, you won't find any prohibition, you won't find any Tumah that is imposed onto the skin of a person. Umay Taima Amru Tameh, why did the Chachamim say that human skin is considered to be Tameh? Gzeira Shema Yasa Adam Oros, listen carefully, Gzeira Shema Yasa Adam Oros Avi V'Imo Shtichin L'Chamor. They're concerned. You know, I need a saddle for my donkey. Maybe I'll take the skins of my parents after they pass away. What am I going to do with it anyway? Maybe I'm going to take it and put it on the donkey to sit on. That's what the Gemara says. So the Ritva says, come on, what kind of crazy people are these? Somebody's going to take a dead body of their parents, no less, of the Imo, and they're going to take the skins and use it on the Chamor? Well, what are you talking about? What does that mean? So the Ritva says, no, all the Rishonim have a different gears from the Gemara, and they take out the word lechamar. So what are you going to do? Still not so pleasing to hear this. He says, no, maybe people would have an idea that they always want to remember their parents. So they're going to make some beautiful kind of mosaic, whatever it is. They're going to hang up the parents' skin on the wall in their house. This way, every time they walk into the living room, they're going to look at this. You think it's funny? I have a friend I used to learn with Bechavrusa. I'm not going to say his name because everybody here knows him. So we used to learn Bechavrusa, and at the time he was married, I was single. And we used to learn in his house a lot because his wife would go whatever she was doing. So we would learn in the house. One time, he had some family member who passed away with no children and left the Yerusha to him. So he went to the house and he was looking at what he wanted to take. So he took a lamp from her home and he put it in his house. It turns out, many years later, they found out that in that lamp were the ashes of her cremated husband. Because she always wanted to remember her husband, so she kept it in the living room. So this was an amazing story. It happened in my own lifetime, and I saw it. This lamp, that who would have thought that that's what's in there? But it was clear that that's what it was. They found that later. And the shaila was if that's asur b'hana or not. It was an amazing story. But anyway, that's what the Rishonim say. The Ritva writes, obviously no one's going to use it to put on a chamar. That's disgraceful. But he says for a person to hang it up in their living room makes a lot of sense. Maybe people would do it, and therefore Chazal were concerned. Maybe a person's going to do such a thing like that, and therefore we don't want anyone to do that, so we're going to say that there's a imposed tuma on the skin of a person. This way, nobody will be led to do that. So Tosis asks Akasha, I don't understand. Don't people know that there's an iser not to bury a body? So you're telling me we have to impose a tuma on it to make sure they're not going to hang it on the wall. Why would they hang it on the wall? There's a mitzvah to do the kvura. There's an iser not to do the nivel ames, everything else. So why are we getting into this? Tosis says no. People are worried about tuma v'tahara. They don't care about everything else. So maybe that's why the Chacham said, we know that there's an Isser Nival Ameis, we know that there's an Isser Kvura, everything else, but he says, we're concerned, if we're not going to make it Tameh, people aren't going to stay away from it. All right, that's what Tosas says. The second answer Tosas gives is no. The Isser of Kvura and the whole Isser Hanam and Ameis is only when we're talking about the mace itself, but the skin, that's not included. There's no Isser Hanam when we're talking about the skin of a person. Or Eina B'chlal Basar. Tosas writes that the skin is not considered to be a part of the busser. The skin is considered to be a separate entity. And this is a very interesting issue that Tosis writes, maybe there's room to say that the skin of a person is considered to be something different than the rest of the body, and the Isser Hana would not apply there. So the Aruch HaShulchan writes, look, if that really was the adopted and accepted opinion, the Shulchan Aruch should clearly say that there's a difference between skin and everything else, but he doesn't say that. So it would seem, mistimas HaShulchan Aruch, from the fact that the Shulchan Aruch does not differentiate and does not draw any distinction, it would seem that that is not the way we assume and that is not the psak. So now, let's get down to our issue. With all this background in mind, again, as we started, there are three potential issues whenever you talk about organ donation. Obviously, we're talking about a person who is already clinically dead and who is halachically dead. That is the only time that we can have this discussion. And we said if you have somebody who is harvesting the organs for the sake of a pikuach nefesh, certainly that would be permissible. The example there of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach gave is somebody who's on dialysis because they have kidney failure. He said very often that's a situation of pikuach nefesh, and that is something we would certainly permit. Now the question that was asked was, what about a person who needs a cornea? So the doctors have done the research, and it seems you're able to harvest a cornea even up to 6 to 10 hours after the person is totally dead, even after the heart is not beating at all. You can still use the cornea for another patient, for another person. And the question is, do you have a right to do that? So the Achronim, the poskim of our generation, had a dispute about this. There were some, the minority. Dayan Weiss from the Eidah Haredes wrote the Minchas Yitzchak. The Tzitz Eliezer from, he was the poskim of Shari Tzedek Hospital, or of Oldenburg. Both of them felt, it's usher, you don't have a right. It's not pikuach nefesh. And therefore they said, you don't have a right to take the cornea from a dead body because you're violating the Avera of Nivel Ames, of Kvura, and everything else, and of Hanamin Ames. And therefore they said it's not permissible. That is not the popular psak among most of the poskes manenu. And most of them say it's permissible for the following few reasons. I discussed this with my father a number of times before, and he agreed that this is the compendium of opinions that we have is generally the following. Number one, there are those who will argue that for a person to be blind the rest of their lives is a pikuach nefesh in and of itself, like you mentioned before. It doesn't mean every blind person dies early, but it's very possible that a person who goes blind can put their lives in danger. That's not such an impossibility. It's not so hard to imagine that. That a person who goes blind can be putting themselves into great danger as a result of the fact that they will not be able to see. Number two, there's a discussion whether or not the cornea, for those who know medicine, there's a discussion whether or not the cornea is considered to be like skin or the cornea is considered to be like flesh. That's a major discussion. And my father told me that he's asked a eye specialist who told him that he thinks that the research indicates that the cornea, the makeup of the cornea, I know nothing, I have no idea, but he said that the makeup of the cornea seems to be more like skin than like flesh. He asked, actually, a doctor in the city who told him that he feels that the cornea is more similar to skin than it is to flesh, which gets into that opinion of Tosis, who says the whole Isser of Hanam and Ames might not even apply when we're talking about skin as opposed to flesh. So that's another smach to rely upon. The third thing that they rely on is not only the fact that this is a potential pikuach nefesh, not only the fact that this is skin and perhaps it's not subject to Isuri Hana. Number three, who said there's an Isur Hana min Ames Meisei Akum? As we mentioned, that's a machlokas the Shach and the Shulchan Aruch, whether or not we assume that Meisei Akum are subject to that Isur Hana. So here in America, most of the times when you're going to have a cornea transplant, it's going to be done from a non-Jew, just based on the numbers, based on statistics. So we assume that would be another issue that we would be able to get around. The Yisur Kvura, as we said before, is not so clear whether it's an Issur D'Oraisa or D'Rabbanan not to bury. The Rambam says it's an Issur D'Oraisa if you don't bury, but that in and of itself is a machlokas. And the Tosfos Yontif says, that's true, but there's no mitzvah of Kvura for Pachas Mikazayas. And when you're talking about such a small amount, a cornea is tiny, so it's certainly less than a Kazayas. In a case like that, perhaps the whole mitzvah of Kvura doesn't apply at all, and therefore we would not be even violating the Issur of Kvura in that case either. And when we talk about Nivel HaMeis, it's hard to argue that this is called Nivel HaMeis when the mace is so happy and proud that the cornea is being taken out in order to save another person's life, in order to save another person's eyesight. So in a case like that, perhaps Nivel HaMeis would not really be a factor either. Again, each one of these issues on its own wouldn't be enough to pass in the Sharla, but when you put everything together in perspective, it might be enough of an argument to say that we should allow it. There was a tremendous chiddush of Rav Unterman, one of the former chief rabbis. It was not accepted at all, but it's an interesting chiddush. He said, maybe the only time when you have an Isser Hanam and Ames is when you have a piece of a dead body. But he says here, once you put the cornea into a person's body, now it's live. So how can you say that's Hanam and Ames? It now turns into Hadatrias Amesim. All right, you know, it's like a little bit circular logic. What? Again, that's the way he got around everything. He said there's no Isser Kvura because it's not a dead part of a body. And there's no Isser Nivel HaMeis, there's no Isser Hanam and HaMeis because it's not dead. This was something that was rejected because everybody, like everybody laughed here, shouldn't laugh at Rav Unterman, but this svar is not something that's so accepted at all because it's a little bit hard to hear. And not only that, the Shach writes on Yerideya as well, similar to what the Rama says. The Rama says in Hilchos Shabbos, if a person has a situation of Sakanas Eiver, which is not pikuach nefesh. Let's say somebody needs, I don't know what a good example would be, where you have a sakanas eiver where it's not a real pikuach nefesh. I don't know, you have to think of an example. Many doctors say today, almost every sakanas eiver today, if you don't take care of it properly, it can lead to a pikuach nefesh. You can get a clot, and you never know what can happen to that. So you have to dream up a scenario. But the Rama says when you have a sakanas eiver on Shabbos, you would be allowed to violate Isurim Dirabanan in order to help yourself take care of the sakanas eiver. So if it means using electricity, which we assume is only the Rabbanon, something, whatever it is, Amir La'akum, that would all be permissible in order to save the Sakana Saver, in order to save this one limb from being destroyed. And therefore, the Shach writes over here as well. Maybe when you have a Sakana Saver, we would also allow any Issur D'Rabbanon, not just with regard to the laws of Shabbos, but any Issur D'Rabbanon would be permissible. And therefore, the Shach writes that maybe we should say here, if you have a situation like this, and you're talking about Nivel HaMeis, which might only be Midrabanan, and you're talking about Or HaMeis, which might, all these different things that we mentioned, and Hana from a dead body of a non-Jew also might only be Midrabanan. Putting all that together, and we're talking about a person who's certainly going to suffer a Sakana Sever, in a case like that, maybe we have enough room to say you'd be allowed to violate an Issur D'Rabbanan and there would be no issue at all. So when you put all this together, it would seem that that's why we have been noted lahakel to allow for the cornea transplant to be done, and it's not a violation of any of the three surim, as we mentioned before. Yeah?
If it's Pachas Mikazayis and there's an Issur Kvura,
yeah,
but you have a non-Jew, you don't necessarily have the Issur Kvura there.
Correct.